So you'll know that issues of Jewish identity really fascinate me in South Africa. I've always thought, unfortunately, we are so uniform. We are just this big lump of Lithuanian Jews with a sprinkling of Sephardi Jews from Rhode Island via the Congo. We don't really get exposed to other kinds of Jewish identities. And today, the person that we will be joined by, in fact, he's on the phone now, is a man whose personal journey mirrors that of thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews from the Arab world, and he has made it his mission to ensure that those stories are never forgotten. Just by way of some more introduction, Edwin Shuka was born in Baghdad and forced to flee Iraq as a teenager, leaving behind a once thriving Jewish community that had existed there for over 2,500 years. He's a passionate advocate, speaker, and activist working to preserve Jewish heritage across the Middle East. And he even apparently bought a house in Iraq in a bold attempt to reclaim and to build what was lost. Edwin, thank you for speaking to us on 101 Chai FM. It is such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Simon.
Edwin, so for those who are hearing about your name and about you for the first time, tell me who you are and what is the story that you carry with you?
I was born in Baghdad in 1955. I was born to my father was Shaul, and Shaul was the absolute only person left in Iraq after his parents, his siblings, his aunties, his uncles, all left in the big, huge expulsion of Jews, which happened in 1951. My mother have a very similar case. Besides her father and mother, all her brothers, all her sisters, uncles, aunts, cousins, everybody left in the big Aliyah. So in 1950, there were 150,000 Jews in Iraq, as you said so eloquently, 2,610 years been in this very area.
Edwin, can I just stop you there for a moment? You say 1951.
Sure.
I find that a very interesting date, and I'd like you to explain to me why that date. I thought things started to go incredibly wrong in Iraq from the Farhud, which, if I'm not mistaken, was in 1941.
Perfect timing. It was 1st of June, 1941. However, the Jews of Iraq were not that keen on actually leaving behind the very comfortable life that they had. They lived for like the Jews of South Africa live now, and I've been recently in South Africa. And and it's not easy to just say, you know what, let's go and go fight Arabs in Palestine, because this is what the biblical homeland is. So therefore, that thing went back to normal after 1941, so to speak. However, but now the young people are now alerted that our time in Iraq is coming to an end.
That's fascinating. And perhaps just by way of explanation, because not everybody will know what the Farhud was, but if I'm not mistaken, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Mufti of Jerusalem, had a hand in whipping up the local populace against the local Jews, and I believe 180 or thereabouts, between 180 and 200, were slaughtered in one day. So that's the
Farhud. The most important thing, Simon, is that this was the first time Jews were targeted as Jews, and a pogrom that was labeled Final Solution was inspired. Besides Haj Amin Husseini, he had a lot of help from the German ambassador, and of course, as you know, Haj Amin Husseini had visited Hitler and was pictured with him and carried on this mission to actually annihilate the Jews of Iraq. It didn't work out in 1941, but the youngsters were alerted again, and they started training. They started joining Noah, which is the Zionist movement, sure, preparing them. And in 1948, Iraq was one of the seven Arab countries that attacked the young state of Israel. And when they were defeated, they all came back and took it upon the Jewish population across the Middle East. And just for, they were, in that time, there were 856,000 Jews in living in Arab countries, and now there's about 3,000. So you can imagine the ethnic cleansing that happened. Why did it not happen in 1948? Because that was a wartime. The state settled, started operating, the Jewish agency started operating, and were able by 1951 to then absorb these people who are now being expelled from their homes with nothing. I mean, the Jew of Iraq was allowed to have 3 suits with him, the woman 4 dresses, 1 single ring, marriage ring, wedding ring, and 20-something pounds sterling. And that's it. 4 books, you know, it was a very prescribed list. And then by the time I was born in 1955, that was all behind us. And the vast majority, over 93% of the population, have now been displaced. Most of them, 90-something plus of them in Israel. And many of them, including my grandparents, were actually put into what it was called Ma'abarot, which is refugee camps, for years. Their kids were enlisted and were taught Hebrew, and became part of the Israel society. But the parents were, like my grandparents, unfortunately were the generation that had to pay the price, just like the 40 years in the desert. This is the generation that paid the price without tasting the joy of being in the promised land.
Just rewind a little bit and give me a sense of the Jewish community in Baghdad. What was it comprised of? Was it an educated community? Are we talking the industrialists and the doctors? Are we talking like the Greek Jews in Salonika, the dock workers? What kind of population were we talking about?
Right, 150,000 had all sectors, but the education in the late 19th century, the Lycée Français opened its doors in Iraq. In many even smaller towns, there was a Lycée Français there. And that helped. By the time the British came in 1917, after the First World War, they found a community even versed in European languages, in French and in English, a community that is, by the way, there were more schools, almost as many Jewish schools as the entire country, from the Lycée and onwards, and anyway, the Jews were very much an educated thing. They became civil servants of the entire country. They run the post office, the trains, the anything that the British brought, it was only entrusted with the Jew. The Jew was the music. The classical Arabic music was 100% monopolized by Jews.
You're joking.
Doctors. Yeah. In fact, you know, because it wasn't accepted that Muslim would sit and play classical music in weddings and things like that. So that was 100% Jewish. The doctors, the lawyers, the pharmacists, whatever profession was there, and of course the financial system of Iraq itself as a young kingdom was planned and executed by Sir Sasson Hezqel, who was knighted by the Queen for his services to establishing the financial system of Iraq. And his methods are still taught today in Baghdad University.
Just remarkable. Just in terms of the local populace, I want to get my head around this concept of dimitude, of being dimmy, the Jews being second-class status. Did you ever feel that? Was it ever real in any way? Or had Jews somehow managed to transcend the legislative shackles that Islam perhaps had put on them?
There were no shackles. Whatever you call the dimmy, the tax, is actually, for most of the Iraqi Jews, were very happy to pay that small tax to get out of army service, to get out of anything
it's
like
the jizya,
that.
Yeah.
So now, the jizya. The dhimmi really across the 1400 years we lived with Muslims who brought in this thing, was actually, it was a tax only on the people of the book, on Christians and Jews. It wasn't there to humiliate them. It was saying, you're not going to fight with us. You're not going to this one, but we will protect you because you are the people of the book and we accept you. And, you know, some people translate that now. It's a revisionist way.
You didn't feel it. That's interesting.
We felt superior. We lived in the fanciest houses. We lived in palaces. We had education throughout the whole thing. We were leading in everything. And I'm talking about the golden years now of the 1920s, 1930s, and towards the end of the 30s, then you've got the incitement against Jews. That's the beginning of the Nazi-inspired Haj Amin Hosseini Farhud, and that's when the bell rang, that our time is coming to an end.
So you left apparently at 16 years old. I presume you.
So just to catch up. Yeah. By the time I was born, in 1955, I didn't even know where the family had cousins and uncles and grandparents. I did not know, because the word Israel was forbidden. And I never heard it. You know, it was always in a kind of derogatory manner about this bastard type of state or something like that. Al-Laqita, they used to say, instead of the word Israel. And no mention of the word. And I definitely was not, our parents never said, you've got grandparents, you've got uncles, you've got cousins, nothing. So I just assumed a family is a father, mother, and children, and that's it.
Wow.
So we lived in a bubble, and the first 8 years was paradise for us. By the time 1955, the king was there, British-inspired, a parliament, and that was followed by a benevolent dictator called Abdul Karim Qasim. So I only have great memories for my first 8 years. And then things changed and moved from paradise to hell in an instant in 1963.
So I've only got 5 minutes with you left.
Yes.
So I want to get to this issue of your very strong identity today as being an Iraqi Jew. How and why? You left at 16. I presume you've lived the vast majority of your life outside of Iraq. Explain to me where this sense, this nostalgic connection comes from and why it's so strong.
Sure. Once we settled, we went straight from, we escaped from Iraq. It was sometime, you had me back and I'll tell you stories about how we escaped. And we escaped with nothing. And we started as refugees, asylum seekers in London, in England. And we rebuilt our lives. And once that was done, and we started feeling comfortable, and we had our own house and smelled freedom, I missed something very, very much. I missed not Iraq itself, mm-hmm. but the status of a Jew in Iraq. Iraq was the son of the Jewish community. We were there 1,200 years before the Arabs. We were there, you know, we were civil servants. We brought civilization. We wrote the Talmud. We started in the world. The first two universities, like Oxford and Cambridge, was 1,000 years before Oxford and Cambridge was started at the time of the Talmud in that. And all that, and the shrines. We have six biblical shrines, Ezra, Yeheskel, Yonah, and all this was my heritage. And I felt that I was the last piece of the chain. And with me, all this will die. And I didn't see anything about my ancestors, not in the Jewish schools here, not in Israel. And that's when I made up my mind, right in the, like in the early 80s, I am going to fight back. I am going to claim that back, if at all possible. And in 2003, with the fall of Saddam, that did become possible. And I was the first Jew to go back to Baghdad right there in 2003, when there was no army, no police, was absolute chaos. But I was there. And I've been going, and you know, last week I went to Iraq to check my house that is still well and kept. And that was last week. I keep going because I am not going to let go of my ancestors' achievement and building a civilization there.
Edwin, we have run out of time, and I need you to promise me that you will talk to me again, because there is so, I haven't even asked the questions of identity. There is so much more to discuss with you. My producer is telling me I have to go. I don't want to, but promise me we will talk again.
Wishing you, thank you for giving me this introduction. And
talk again.
And I'll take a rain check on a much longer interview.
Absolutely done deal. Thank you so much.